Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, hello, hello. How are we, puppet?
Hello, puppet.
I feel like that's the thing people say, right?
I mean, it was in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Hello, puppet. That's a fun thing to say.
I mean, could be. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Black Tower Podcast, a Wheel of Time podcast. We talk about wheels, and we talk about time. And I feel like I made the same joke last week, but it's fine. Yeah. It's not repetitious because time goes in a circle.
Oh, everything that happened will happen again. Mm-hmm. And everything that will happen has already happened.
There is no point. You have no control. Give up all control now. Just surrender to the time flame thing.
Wrap your mind around it. It doesn't matter if you want to or not.
I mean,
get what I did there? Wrap your mind around it.
Around the world? Around the world.
Investigate flat wheel of time. Huh? Huh? You ever thought about
flat wheel of time? Wheel of time is flat.
No. Time's not round. Time is
wheel
flat.
Wheel of time conspiracy theorist. The wheel of time conspiracy. Is flat. The wheel's flat. Wake the hell up. Call.
Flatten the wheel.
Wake up, sheeple.
Make the wheel flat again.
You're all sheep being herded by the dragon reborn. Go.
By the dragon reborn.
I am one of your hosts. My name is Andrew. I'm the Bajan Mahal. I lead the battles around these here parts. If you want to fight, go talk to somebody that works for me because I just tell them what to do. I don't actually do that.
Chances are you're not important enough to fight him. Okay.
I would, but I would just like feel so totally bad for you.
You got so many underlings that are like, no, master, allow me to fight him, and I will decimate him for your glory.
Then there's that one asshole Todd that's like, master, show us what you taught us last week again. It was really cool. Do it now.
Yeah, Todd. And
then I feel like, what is that? That fucking bullshit dust training, the Detroit urban survival training that'll get you killed.
What?
Have you seen those films? Bro,
what?
This dude thinks he is a fucking heart charging war fighter and he teaches you shit that will get you killed. You might have seen some of the clips where it's like if somebody has a gun to your back and they just do this like this big cartwheel spin and slap it out the way. And then somebody will stitch it on TikTok and then they'll like just move and then it shows them in front of like the gates of heaven. Right. Look up Detroit Urban Survival Training Dust.
I will. There's the one that so I like bad. is like Mick Martial Arts Dojo or something like that. And it just shows all those dudes. I love videos exposing fake martial arts masters. Which, fun story, you know that wonderful movie Bloodsport starring Jean-Claude Van Damme?
Yes.
Do you know that was based on a real guy?
Really?
Yeah. Frank Dux is a real guy. And also, just to add a little bit of layer of fun to this, he's also full of shit.
Shocker.
He told this story. He was never in any military, but he told this story about being in the military and going AWOL to avenge the death of blah, 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 whatever, the movie Bloodsport. And they made it into a movie, and they found out years later, oh, yeah, by the way, he's full of shit.
I'll take the shit that never happened for 1,000, Alex.
It is literally the gag in Tropic Thunder that actually happened.
When he tries to tell you how bad his deployment to Rhode Island was.
Oh, God.
Oh, that's a real story. I literally had somebody try to equate my deploying to the Middle East, which actually wasn't hard. Wasn't hard. Right. I'm not saying it was. They tried to equate my deployment to the Middle East to them being stuck on duty in Rhode Island. So, anyway, wow. Who are you? Who are you? Person talking.
Who am I? Who am I? So glad you asked. My name is Josh. I hold the current world title championship belt, Sorobon Mahal, And I, yes!
Hey, forgot we had those up here.
Yeah, we've got those. Those are things. Those are actually also stickers as well. Well, I forgot what I was saying. I got so excited about my I'm Josh. I'm the Sorbonne Hale. I'm here to talk about the Wheel of Time with my good buddy Andrew. That's who I am.
You throw up a sigil and we forget all about what we're talking about. If you're listening to this live, we hope the FOMO... Well, actually, live is fine. If you're listening to this whenever it goes public out on the YouTubes, we hope the FOMO isn't too strong for you. Because if you're listening to this live on the day it comes out, or the day after, or the day after the day after, you're probably, unfortunately, not at JordanCon, or you're taking a rest in your room. And if you're recharging spoons, we hope that you recharge all the spoons you need. True. If you're not, and you're just trying to find something to help with that FOMO feeling, we hope we can help you feel like you're not missing out in some way, shape, or form. And if you are at JordanCon, please pay attention to your Twitter and our Discord if you're in it. That kind of stuff. We'll be tweeting out when we're like trying to go to lunch, when we're trying to go to dinner, trying to do different things going around. We're doing a live stream from the lobby is the current plan at JordanCon at 5 p.m. Eastern on Saturday. So that is the 19th, right? No, 20th.
20th. On 420, bro! Ah!
Oh, man. I better be careful, man. I might get my job calling me for reasons unbeknownst.
Dude, I wonder, like, why my job has never once been like, hey, he goes out of town for 420 every year.
You know, I never thought about it that way.
I never did either. I guarantee you they probably don't either. My bosses are all like boomer dudes.
You know what it is? When you're in the military, people get paid to do this shit regardless of how many it is or isn't, so they don't care about how many people they test. When you work for a private company, the company actually has to pay per test.
Yes, I did know that.
So, look who we got here. We got our friend Wine.
We got some wine. He's brought some wine. And
the wine is called in
the Wolf. We got the wolfiness in the house.
And yes, we were talking piss test.
We were.
Private companies have to pay for it. That's why for a lot of people, you rarely get piss test. Now, magically, Josh and I will both get piss test.
Yeah, right. We will both randomly be selected.
Yeah. You know, it's like a extra security search at TSA. You've been randomly selected. Ah, bullshit.
Or like when my suitcase that has all my electronics in it gets searched at every leg of the airport, every single one. I used to put the TSA slips because they say they have to put a thing in there. Hello, we fucking searched your bag. And I lay them lengthwise in my suitcase so that as soon as they open the bag, they can see how many of them there are in there. It's fun.
Yeah. So I didn't think about doing it until now. And now, like, now that I'm about to fly out in 2 days, it doesn't really matter because I'm also not flying to WatCon and I'm not flying to Gathering Madness. Because I'm riding the motorcycle. It's not like I'm just,
that's
not
right.
There's something I want to do for the bike, and it's going to be expensive. Anyway, everything with a Harley is expensive. What am I talking about? Anyway, I was looking at TSA PreCheck, and I'm like, cool. I got one of those new fancy next-gen USID things for the military. You know, the newer military
identification
cards. And I'm like, surely that counts for something.
Nope.
No. I can choose that as primary form of identification, and they still want me to show up with a birth certificate. So I still need to get that so I can get with the passport so that I can even start to entertain the feasibility of going to MercuryCon in Prague. Which I want to do.
I wish I could go so bad.
You know, my bank account and my PTO account keep looking at all the time I want to take off and shit I want to do. And just screaming.
Yeah.
And I know I'm not alone in that, which makes me feel so much better about that. So, but we'll see. Anyway, if you're at JordanCon, and you happen to hear this part of it and you're like, wow, these guys have been rambling about nothing for 10 minutes, which is still half the amount of time we talk about beer normally. Come and say hi. Come and look for us. We're going to be doing some giveaways while we're there. We've got some sticker packs that will include all of the stickers that our lovely patrons have enjoyed up until 2024. So it won't include anything that's gone out this year, but it'll include everything before. We're only doing two giveaways of those full sticker packs. So be on the lookout for those. As every con we go to, we'll be giving away some coins throughout the weekend. That'll be kind of like pseudo scavenger hunting. Like, hey, go and find me or go and find Josh and say this phrase or do this thing or whatever it is. And the first person that does it that doesn't already have a coin will get it. And these coins are hefty. First comment everybody makes on the coins is how like nice and quality they feel. And if you're part of the Black Tower.net folks that looks like they're doing some coins, you could come away with an extra coin.
That's true.
By winning one of ours. By getting theirs, because ours are like, you know, obviously the first coin.
Yeah, that's right.
But I've seen some of I think they've posted out the design for it. Either way, it looks fucking dope.
Yeah, it looks like a super cool coin. I can't wait to go find one.
Yeah. So look out for that kind of stuff, as well as us going out for dinner and for lunch and that kind of stuff. And if you can't make it and you're stuck in some of the FOMO stuff, don't be afraid to hit us up and see if we can stop in. We'll try to keep an eye out and see if we can when we have maybe some downtime here and there. I know we've tried to do it every year so far because, you know, we like hopping in and talking to the folks that unfortunately couldn't make it. Maybe you're trying to deal with some FOMO, so maybe we can help ease some of that. Or maybe just gloat about the fact that we made it somewhere and you can't be there. Nah, nah, boo-boo. Whatever works. With all that said and done, we actually had somebody to plug this episode, and I forgot who it was. Because I'm terrible at this. The Great Blight. In the meantime, if you're just trying to look up some of that fantastic information on that Wheel of Time goodness, and you maybe don't want to be spoiled, or you're like, I want to specifically know what Perrin was not doing in the Dragon Reborn, greatblight.com has a fantastic wiki that's broken down in a spoiler-friendly way. And if you're dealing with some of that FOMO con, you're like, there's just not enough stuff out here for me to enjoy. I need to find more Wheel of Time content to just consume. Greatblight.com has a massive repository of different Wheel of Time content creators, from YouTubers, podcasters, artists, trivia, all kinds of stuff. Go and check it out. And when they inevitably don't ask you who sent you, but you want to tell them anyway, let them know Black Tower Podcast directed you that way. With all that said and done, we're going to get today's spoiler warning on so that everybody is safe, sanitized, and spoiler STD free get into today's episode. As I keep talking while I try to look at what I wrote here so that I know which one to click. Here it is. Here is your ramblings. Well, I rambled, but here's your spoiler warning for today.
Hello, I'm Tamsir Al-Norm. You may remember me from the Dusty Wheel or the Black Tower Podcast. I'm here to give you a public service announcement about spoilers, as this episode may contain some. As if you didn't already know that, like watching the film Titanic and being surprised that the boat sinks at the end of the movie. Hello, moron. The movie is called Titanic. Of course the boat fracking sinks. This show is called the Black Tower Podcast, as in from the Wheel of Time. And these three guys are Ashaman. Well, at least two of them. I don't know about that. Anyway, you have been warned.
You're not wrong. You have been warned.
I think Norm has the privilege of being 2 weeks in a row because I think I used the same one last week.
I think you did.
Yeah, we're caught up. Or we're not caught up. I don't know. It doesn't matter. You know, Norm, thanks for the spoiler warning. If you want to make one for us and you're a patron, make it and send it to us. I know I've got
3 weeks in a row.
Did I really use Norm for 3 weeks in a row?
Yeah.
Well, it's mainly just because I'm avoiding using that that he who comes with the wine spoiler warning.
Tonight's episode is going to be full of lots and lots and lots of conjecture. Like,
oh, three Shimon. Oh, okay. I get no. Okay.
Oh. I was right. Still, I'm just saying. No, tonight's episode is full of a lot of conjecture.
Are you all right? No, because you were all left.
Do you have any idea how hard it is for me to stay on topic right now?
Yeah, I do.
Con brain is killing me right now. We're talking about the ale fin and the eel fin tonight. We want to talk about them and figure out what the deuce, like what arguably one of the most disjointed presences in the Wheel of Time. It does not fit. They do not belong in the Wheel of Time. And yet, not only are they there, but they play a pivotal role. Right?
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like you read the description that I wrote for this episode. I used the word played a pivotal role. The phrase used to play a pivotal role.
Oh, you know what it is? Gosh. It's all the practice with all the EPR benefits we've written.
Yeah, definitely it.
Single hand EPR
bullets being recycled.
Led a team.
The same stuff last year.
That played a pivotal role in shop success. Oh, shit. Yeah.
So collectively, being both sides of them, the Fin is the collective name of two separate species or entities or groups of extra dimensional humanoids. It's definitely like fucking aliens, History Channel vibes. Each live in a dimension that is quite different and outside of the real world as we know it in the books, seemingly separated from each other, but yet somehow connected. It's like the scenery outside of their areas looks very similar, but they also seem to be in distinctly different areas where they don't engage. But we find out later that the Fin did in fact build the pyramids. It is in fact the Fin that did that. The pyramids of Giza actually started off as three separate towers of Genji, but just over time, erosion, sand buildup, tectonic plate movements, you know, just made them look like pyramids instead of the towers. That's absolutely what happened.
Totally.
But so the Tower of Genji does lead to the realm of the Fin, and each can also be reached individually using certain Terangreal.
Correct.
So it's collectively joined realm, but where they have two almost distinctly separate sections of the same realm.
Yeah, it's
that like shadow overlap, but don't really overlap. Are the tops of the towers just the tip?
Just the tip. No, like,
okay. My friend, have you ever been menage a trois by the elfin? The real questions asked here, right on Black Tower Pod. Cast.
I know of only a couple people who have done that, and they did not enjoy it.
I mean, maybe you just didn't try hard enough.
So we've got what? We've got three methods of entry into this dimension.
Oh my. Right? Three.
Actually, there's three.
Shocking.
No, you've got, so as you were saying, you got the two twisted door Terangreal. No, right?
I just mentioned the tower.
Oh, well, you've got two Terangreal. They're twisted door frames. One of them goes to the Elfin, and one of them goes to the Ilfin. And it's it's a strange kind of a, you know, when you go in to the door, they have this like ritual. They're like, oh yes, you've come under the treaty. We don't know what the treaty is. We have no fucking clue what the treaty is. But there's a long-standing treaty. And then, of course, you've got the entrance of the tower itself, which you're not supposed to know how to get into it. And when you enter in the tower itself, you do not enter under the protection of any treaty. And the elfin and the eelfin can tell the difference on whether or not you enter under the protection of treaty or not. How? We don't know. Like, they just know. Like, maybe it's like ringing a doorbell when you go through the door. I don't know. What do you think, Andrew? Do you think that's the possibility?
What, do they just know when someone wants to come in?
No, they just know when someone comes in under the protection of the treaty.
So, I think that the entire thing is collectively binding. I think that because of their kind of extra-dimensional ish nature, that they have, like, it's like an alien race, like an alien species making a treaty with all of humanity. So, like, representatives of, like, the Anunnaki, like, lit up every conspiracy theorist and had
listening. Yeah, we just hit up every algorithm, didn't we?
Yeah. We just got shadow banned on YouTube for mentioning Anunnaki or whatever. Making a treaty with humanity. So you got like a couple of human leadership that makes a treaty with the Anunnaki, and they remember the treaty, but humanity forgets it forever because. So it's an ancient treaty between themselves and humans of the real world that anyone may enter into their worlds, providing they do not bring any source of light, any iron, or any instruments of music, the modern-day rhyme that represents conditions, courage to strengthen, fire to blind, music to dazzle, iron to bind, coming from the Snakes and Foxes game. So, which I like the rhyme more than like just knowing, hey, don't bring this stuff, because the rhyme tells us, like, what does it do? Like, okay, something to make light, they're not used to it. It blinds them. They can't see you. Music to dazzle, okay, if you bring something to play music, it puts them in a trance. Iron to bind, they can't break free with iron. And I think when we do see them interact with iron, like, it almost burns them if it...
Yeah. It is. Yeah. It's very fey, right?
You've got a great example of it.
Yeah, you've got this treaty in which they are bound to obey. They don't like iron, you know, which also Fae do not like iron, you know. There's all the, oh my gosh, my camera keeps moving. What's going on here? Stop moving, camera. No, you got, you know, iron and fire and music, and like these are classic symbols in like Fae and fairy lore. And it's interesting. I love how it is given to us as the reader, because you learn about the Snakes and Foxes game, you learn about the rhyme, and you learn that, oh yeah, that's a kid's game. Everybody figures out that you can't win, and everybody eventually stops playing. And how many like nursery rhymes do we have in modern day society that you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that was a thing. For instance, Ring Around the Rosie, that's about the bubonic plague. Like, that's not just a cute little rhyme. No, that's about the plague. So there's also a lot of like old wives' tales and rhymes for like surviving, for, you know, finding plants that are edible, for dealing with animals that are venomous. Like, there's just a lot of stuff like that. And so when we get, you know, when we start talking about the elfin and the eelfin, and you've got this incredibly fey agreement, it, I think, adds a sort of dimension of intrigue, because they also behave a lot like fae. They also behave a lot like fairies. Like I was saying before, you know, you teleport in, you're under the treaty of the of whatever agreement was made. It appears as though the same treaty applies to both Aelfin and Ilfin, but the Aelfin and Ilfin provide different things when you go in to bargain with them. The Aelfin with the A are your snake people, right? Your lizard people. Those are your Anunnaki type people. They will answer three questions. Now, this is the one. This is also the ones that most people have ever seen, because this is the one that's got the twisted door Tirangrial in that Berlaine and her family has used to keep. I think it was to keep Tyr from invading, right? It's the knowledge that they have used to ensure their sovereignty. Is Tyr or Ilion? Tyr. I think it's Tyr. Yeah, the High Lords of Tyr want to invade. And Verlaine is, her family has used it. She's never used it because it's, what is it, like you can only use it once in a lifetime or something like that. But you go in and you ask three questions, and they answer your questions. They say, all right, cool. Here's your answers to your questions. And as long as you have maintained the treaty that has been given forward, you brought no musical instruments with you, you brought no fire with you, you brought no instruments of iron with you, as long as you maintain the rules of the treaty, they will answer those questions. And I don't know how they get paid. I don't know how the snake people get paid. But they feast on your essence somehow, and that you give them in exchange for answers to those questions. Are you familiar? Are you more familiar with that than I am,
Andy? I don't know that I am. It seems that both of them view the sensations, emotions, and experiences of the their visitors, but the Aelfin seem to extract additional prices. Because if I'm not mistaken, the Aelfin are the more...
They're the foxes.
They're the foxes?
Yeah, the Aelfin are the snakes, and they answer questions. The Aelfin with the E, they are the foxes.
Yeah.
And they also do, they also have a three question kind of a thing, but instead of granting knowledge, they give, yeah, it's like three wishes kind of a thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so you have some stuff coming together there. You have like the kind of adages of cunning like a fox, yeah, which makes me think also kind of the age old thing with genies, right? You know,
exactly.
You can wish for something. One of the greatest things, anime wise, this is a good anime reference. Don't watch this anime around anybody that you care what they care, what they think about you. It's called Sora no Toshimono or Heaven's Lost Property. And it's basically this super powerful, angeloid, like angel kind of cyborg kind of android thing comes to Earth or falls to Earth, and this guy rescues her. And close enough. Yeah, he is close to F, and F is for no bottom line. They'll do whatever they want to you. Basically, there comes a point where, so she has a card that can like make things happen, like wishes or whatever. And the guy was like jokingly wishes for world domination. And you're like, okay, cool. Everybody in the world would just bow to him. Well, what actually happens is when she processes his wish, this the system that's facilitating the wishes is basically looking across all of humanity and going, who will submit to him as a ruler, him being ruler? And it determines nobody will. So instead of just making everybody submit, it just gets rid of everybody in the world. So he rules the world. He's also the only human.
Damn. Man.
Do you really? Do you really? Do you know Heaven's Lost Property there, Wolf Brother? It's a good fucking show. It's a really good show. And it's one of those that, like, everybody makes a joke about watching Korn on the internet for the plot. Korn, you know, with a P. This one is actually one that, like, the subplot of the anime is, like, freaking crazy. I mean, that is, like, 50% of the anime. But the subplot is so fucking compelling that you're just like, I got to see what happens next. And it's just like tons of fan service surrounded by like a core plot. It's like the inverse of a lot of anime that has like really plot focused, but it's okay. And then they throw in like fan service. Anyway, like a genie wish, the same way, I think is the same way the Finn go. Because we see that with Matt. He asked for stuff and they're like, cool. Yeah, we'll give it to you. But you also failed to be specific enough. So a lot of this is going to bite you in the ass. And if the part of it biting you in the ass results in us being able to exploit you in yes. whatever way we see fit,
yes.
we will. Because the Ilfin are also the ones that are frequently depicted as having clothing made of human skin.
Yes.
And so that very much seems to be where people have come in, and they've come in with this, it's almost poetic. They come with this promise of greed fulfilled, right? You can make your wishes, and as long as it is within our power, we will make it happen. You can get whatever yeah. you want. And surely there are people that wish to be like, you know, I want to be happy until I die. And they're like, okay. Trance-like yeah. euphoric state, you don't feel the pain while we devour you.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, shit like that. So I think like they extract a heavier price, but they also provide a more readily available reward that can also encompass what the Ailfin provide.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Again, I'm going to lean on the whole fae realm, lean fairy realm
when you're
parallel sure. here. Because there are examples of this where, you know, you make a deal with a fae and they try to use tricky wording to trap you into, you know, a lifetime of servitude or trap you into, you know, exacting a price. What is the price? All of your skin. Oh, shit. Not only that, but the Fae were always very crafty and clever in that they were always like, hey, I'll give you this gift. And you're like, cool, thanks. And then they go, cool, now I'm going to exact the price that this gift is worth. And because you didn't set a price with the Fae to get whatever, you know, then you've got this situation in which you now have an open-ended contract where they can basically take whatever they want. And that's exactly what Matt ends up doing. He goes into the Ilfin. He asks, you know, he inadvertently makes three demands of them, and they gift him with, what was it? The Ashindarai, the memories of all the generals.
So the first thing he says is, I go from here to there with gaps in my memory, gaps in my life. If I were given a choice, I would fill in those gaps. And the Ilfin are like, cool. So they fill the gaps in his memory with the memories of great generals and strategists who lived in a time between the end of the War of Trollocs and the Consolidation. And they're like, cool, yeah. And by granting them that, they're like, we made you the greatest military leader of your time. Which ultimately, does turn out to be true and enables him to lead the forces of the light. So it's beneficial. And of course, the Fen want the world to continue on because how else would they continue to get humans to prey upon? So the Fen are going to be predisposed against the Dark One. So in a morbid kind of way, they fight for the light.
Yes. Well,
they work in favor of the light versus working in favor of the dark.
They fight for their own self-interest.
Yeah. Then the next thing he says is, I want to find a way to be free of Aes Sedai and the power. That's where he gets the Foxhead Medallion from.
Right.
Which is a Terran Greal pendant, which absorbs and dissolves weaves directed towards him. As long as it is directed directly towards him. And the last, again, is, I want to be away from you and back to Ruinion, and that's where they give him the Ashandarai, which turns out, as we find out much later on in the series, way later on, is a key for access into and out of the Tower of Genji by drawing the symbol of the Snakes and Foxes board game, which is the symbol of the Fen. But of course, when Matt first gets it, I think they even say something like, you never asked to be returned alive. And then it switches to Rand's POV. And whenever Rand comes out of the glass columns, Matt's there just hanging from from a scarf on the Ashandarai in the trees of Avendisora.
Yes.
The limbs of Avendisora.
And missing an eye. Oh, no.
No, that's not yet. That's later on. That's the price he pays to help get Moraine out. But is it self-interest? Without them, the Dark One wins. Seems slanted. They're very against the Dark One. Yeah, they are. Because they prey on the emotion, sensations, and experiences of human beings. If the Dark One wins, creation dissolves. That doesn't exist anymore. They can't prey on that anymore. Now, does that mean that they're gone too? I think yes, but most entities other than the Dark One, well, the Dark One's outside of existence anyway, so he doesn't care. So with the exception of Ishamael, most entities choose to try to continue on living in some way, shape, or form.
So. Right. Yeah, that's the thing where I think it's a bit reductive to say that they fight for the light. I don't think they do. I think they fight for self-interest. And I think that the way of the shadow threatens their existence. But of course, I could be entirely wrong. It could be a simple matter that they aren't appetized by the shadow, right? It could be that the only thing they like to feed upon is, the light, people of the light.
That's why I say, I don't think they necessarily fight for the light, but the shadow winning runs contrary to their desires. Because the Fen gain, which seems to be, especially when you look at, the cost benefit of what they're giving versus what they're receiving, experiencing the emotions of the humans that come through the door must be like taking ecstasy, LSD, and the best ganja you've ever had at once. For them to give away this stuff. I mean,
it shows
seeking that and seeking their sustenance. The only way that continues for them is if creation continues with the humanity that they've made this treaty with.
Yeah.
So, if all of creation disappeared, would they disappear too? I think so. And so inevitably at the end, it's the same result. They don't know that they've lost all this, but because they enjoyed this feeling, just like humans enjoy living and loving and doing all this other stuff and, eating that slice of Cinnabon partner cheesecake at the Cheesecake Factory when they go to JordanCon.
Ooh.
Have you had it? fucking him. Anyway, they're not gonna like fight for the shadow. They're not gonna be like, oh, we're gonna direct you towards the dark one. We're gonna work and give you the things that he wants. Because they also just seem to be like the only people we interact with that live in a realm that is like absent the dark one's influence, it seems. But they could just be so twisted that we can't tell. Anyway,
right.
Like they would be predisposed to not working for the light, but it would also be in their interest to work against the shadow.
Right.
Because the shadow failing means that their food source, their prey, continues to live. So when Matt just says, I want the holes of my memory filled, and he's not specific, they could have just given him like every little girl's memory that ever lived in the last 100 years.
That's true.
But they chose to give him the memories of brilliant military generals and strategists that led to him being the incredible general that helps lead the forces of the light to victory. So,
no, that's a good point.
I mean, did they like two steps later, like literally leave him hanging? Yes. But given the power that the Fen seem to possess, is there a good chance that they also knew that the dragon reborn and their combined Tavir and nature would have it to where he gets saved? And gets left with a mark that they know will entice him to return later so they can suck up more of his delicious experienceness?
His delicious Tavirinness?
How rare is it for either side of the Fen to see an individual return to their realm?
Well, I don't...
If they try to go back to the first stone doorway in the Stone of Tyr, and they can't.
Yeah.
It only works one time. So how rare is it that an entity that goes into their realm gets whatever benefit from the Aelfin or the Aelfin ever, assuming they survive, ever returns, and then the Fen get the extra aphrodisiac feeling or taste of their experience since then, which has to be heightened.
So here's the other question too. How much is that actual sustenance for them versus something else entirely? Because remember, the Aelfin haven't seen anybody in 1,000 years.
Yeah.
Right? Because the Twisted Door Tirongrel for that one was in Ruidian. And
a one of. We don't know if they were the only one.
Well, we know the two Twisted Door Tirongrel that we know of, one of them is in Tyr, one of them is in Ruidian. And the only time we get any kind of vision.
Well,
of
actually, the one in Tyr gets moved to the docks, so it's not just in Tyr anymore. So,
point being, smartass. Point being, those are the only two doors we know of. And when you go through either one of those doors, as I think it was Wolf Brother that said it earlier, but they open on a certain location. You enter into a room in which someone receives you and they're like, all right, cool. Yeah, let's go. They recite the little, ritual. You go through, you ask your questions, you ask your wishes, you do your thing. They do their thing and your business is transacted. It's conducted. It's done. When Matt circumvents this and goes through the wall of the Tower of Genjai, when he
gets your
that,
thing out of my Genjai, go.
They escort him still as if he was under the treaty, but they're very surprised by the fact that he's there, and he has a view out a window. And he looks out the window and he can see hundreds of these towers, of these Genjai towers.
Yeah.
It's such a subtle statement that opens up this world to be so much larger. And it, it's crazy.
Yeah. So the place we see Matt go to first is where he makes the deals to get his memories filled, the holes in his memory filled.
Right.
The Fox and Medallion and the Ashandere is kind of known as, it's known as the Chamber of Bonds, which appears to be the main central chamber of the Fortress of the Eelfin.
Right.
Has no columns, distinctly star-shaped, 8 tips and only one doorway, glowing yellow strips run up the sharp ends of the room. There's 8 empty pedestals that are black and ominous, one at each point, which we know the once he's fully in the center, the Eelfin show up and they're like, oh, we're here. For a long time, the chamber could be reached by the twisted redstone doorframe, Town Girl. Of course, that portal has now been destroyed because somebody fucking went full-on football tackle Yeetus Deletus through it. kudos to you, Moraine.
Sacrifice play.
Yeah. But it's possible, or it's theorized, that it could be reached through going through the Tower of Genji, but we never know.
Yes, we do.
Do we? Did they go all the way back to the Chamber of Bonds to
rescue Moraine? Yeah, that's where Moraine is.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Do you know, I often
I miss about, like the one where they're like, oh, we don't know if you can get back to it through the Tower of Genji. And then they're like, a couple lines later, they're like, this is where Matt and Tom and everybody rescue and Mole rescue Moraine. And I'm like, you fucking assholes. Just kidding. I love you guys. Y'all make my research a lot easier. And by research, I mean reading actively during the episode.
Right. Quick tangent, though. Moraine has, when she comes back, when they rescue her from the tower, she has a Sang Greal, right? Which is a bracelet of a woman who's doubled over backwards, grabbing her own ankles, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's Lanfear?
Oh. It's the agony of Lanfear.
Yeah. Like, or not necessarily like the agony of Lanfear, but actually just Lanfear. Like,
I mean,
Moraine did something and was clever enough to like get make a deal with her first. And they were like, cool, Lanfear. We'll suck out your juices and turn you into a Sang Greal.
I love the idea, but I don't think it is because I feel like if it was truly Lanfear, it would have to incorporate the soul in some way. And she is reborn.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But I love it. What I also love is fucking Wolf Brother coming in here with this banger of a question. Is it possible that Aiel, who don't return from the columns, actually make it through the columns, but end up going through the twisted redstone doorway and don't come back? So others think they died in the columns, thus helping explain why the Fen have maintained their sustenance and their clothing.
And if an Aiel were to
the last part, that, like Wolf Brother didn't say, but I was like just adding.
They would already be shooketh.
Yeah.
And then if they walk through the door and all of a sudden some fox people come up to them, they're gonna start dancing.
Yeah.
You should be dancing.
It could be part of why, like, they're also like surprised to see Matt because they're so used to seeing Aiel being the only ones that ever show up.
Well, and it so doesn't now it seem they wear like darker leather skins, so that could be like suntanned, like sunbaked people.
How you go, girl? You sunbaked. I'm trying to find
Why do I keep
I don't know that I don't know that they're that specific. Here is male and female alike, they are tall, so the Eelfin are tall, barefoot. Far too thin for their height, too graceful to be human. Narrow, elongated faces, pupils that are just black, vertical slits and straight black hair, as well as skin that glitters like snake scales. So that's the Eelfin. Where's the search button? Oh, there it is. The eel fin, if I can ever find them. What am I doing here with my life?
So, yeah.
Appearance. The eelfin, male and female alike, they are very tall and sinewy, despite shoulders that are despite shoulders that are too for their narrow waist. Parvalon.net, I found a typo. Love you guys. Hey, found a typo. By shoulders that are too for their narrow waist, probably too wide. They have white skin, deep-set, almost colorless eyes, too big for a human face, sharp teeth, and a narrow jaw. Their pale reddish hair stands up stiffly, and their ears lie flat against their faces and have a hint of a point at the top. Matt's guide wears pale leather straps made out of human skin and studded with silver crisscrossing his bare arms and chest, and a black kilt hanging to his knees. Those who grant the wishes wear long white skirts that hide their feet, their hairs rising stiffly in a crest before spilling down their backs. The men bear even more and wider straps than the guides, studded with gold. Women's attire, aside from the skirts, consists of white waist-length blouses with high lace necks and pale ruffles at their wrist, and they carry bronze lances. Horribly ineffective metal bronze is when you're giving out shit like the Ashandari.
True. Well, but that just illustrates, once again, man, the more I think about this, the more this is just a textbook Fae interaction. Because they don't care about magic. It's because magic is like, that would be like someone coming up to us and being like, oh my God, look at all the air that's around you. Yeah, we breathe air every day. Like, it's not impressive to us at all. But that's kind of the thing, is Fae live in conjunction with, you know, whatever magic they possess. The Aelfin and the Eelfin obviously have a very deep relationship with whatever kind of magic they possess. And they don't care about using it because it's just so natural for them that it doesn't mean anything. We are constantly impressed by it, but we don't really have an accurate measure on what the value of said usage is. So if you go in and say, I want this, and don't tell them what you're willing to pay for it, the Fae will set their own price, which usually causes a lot of pain and grief for you. And the Aelfin and the Eelfin are exactly the same way. The only thing being kind of different is the Eelfin, after they've fed on your saver, usually require an additional price. And that's and you're absolutely correct. The heavy implication is that people say, oh, I wish I'd be happy until I die, and then are immediately killed, and their skins are tanned. And
dude's just like, do you feel happy now? And they're like, yeah, pretty much. Stab.
We kill him quickly and softly so he will not end happiness before he dies.
So when we look at the Aelfin, they answer, well, the treaty is that they will answer three questions truthfully. And that, you know, you can only enter once. And we know that through whatever twist of, well, we don't have to speculate. It's Tavir and shit that made this happen.
Oh, right, Matt, right.
Rand, and Moraine go through the redstone doorway, Tirangreal, in the Stone of Tyr at essentially the pseudo same time. And I'm going to start with Moraine first. So the questions Moraine asked and the answers given her by the Aelfins are never directly addressed. We don't ever find out exactly what they are, but it's speculated that one of them was related to the fact that she came to know the face of the person she was going to marry, an assertion she made shortly after her visit to the Snakemen. So it is thought that her visit to the Elfin is what revealed to her that she would marry Tom Merlin. As for Rand, we don't know his first question or answer. His second question was, how can he clean the corruption of Sidene? Which I hate to use corruption instead of taint. How can I clean up the taint on Sidene? And the only thing we know is that the Elfin answered, but it was not directly. It was not a direct answer to his question. And then lastly, he asked how he can survive, how he can win the last battle and survive it. And the Elfin said, the North and the East must be won. The West and South must be won. The two must be won. To live, you must die. Ultimately, of course, being fulfilled by the fact that to live, he must die. Rand, the body, dies along with the soul of Morden or Ishmael. And the soul of Rand, along with the body of Morden, survives. Matt is what turns things on its heels because Matt is stubborn. Matt asks, should I go home to help my people? And the Elfin are like, you must go to Rhydion. He's like, why? What would I do if I go to Rhydion? They're like, well, if you don't go to Rhydion, you will die. He's like, why will I die if I don't go there? And the Elfin answer, because you would have avoided the threat of fate, you would leave the butt that you have marked adrift from the winds of time, and you would be killed by those who do not want that destiny to be fulfilled. However, because Rand and Matt are both in the realm of the Fen at the same time, their Teverin nature is literally shaking their realm apart. The tower's shaking, shit's crumbling, shit's falling. The Fen are freaking out because they're like, what the hell is going on?
But they're also like in a state of like extreme bliss.
Like, oh no, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Like it's very much the Harry Potter moment where it's like, so you're gonna suffer, but you're gonna be happy about it.
the grim.
The grim.
So because of this, and they're so desperate to get one of them to leave, and yes, right now Matt's the one that's easiest to get to leave, the Fen actually give him an answer to a fourth question. And right, so Matt asks, what is the fate you're talking about? And this is where his whole thing about daughters and moons and nine of them comes about. The fate is marry the daughter of the nine moons, to die and be reborn, and to live again a part of what was, give up half the light of the world to save the world. Yes. Obviously, marry the daughter of the nine moons, being Mary Tuon of the Seanchan, to die and be reborn and to live again, is referencing his
future trip
to
his trip to Rhydion.
I don't think it was. There was another point where Matt essentially dies and survives. Oh, whenever they go to Ilion and Samael is like, and Matt and Avienda and all of them die.
Matt dies three times.
Yeah. Well, no. So here's what I'm getting at. Like the Rhydion thing, yeah, he's not fully dead because Rand is able to revive him through like first aid style measures.
Oh, that's
so true. That's not what separates him from his bond to like the Horn of Valyr. It's when he dies.
It's when
to Samael and Ilion.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that he truly dies and is only reborn because of Balefire.
Robin kills him.
Ravin, that's it.
Yeah,
that's it. Thank you. Thank you,
Robin. Yeah, Robin. Like, there's a what? There's like a whole booby trap scenario.
Wait, that, no. Like, before that, the Dark Hounds. No, the Dark Hounds almost.
They didn't kill him. They slobber. That was where I was going with that too. They slobber on him, which is a death sentence because there's no cure for that. But then Moraine balefires the hound, and it like goes back before it slobbered on him. So
yeah. So yeah. So that's what happens, and it's like to die and be reborn and to live again, a part of what was. I feel like that harkens to him being brought back to life by use of Balefire, and then give up half the light of the world to save the world is him losing his eye,
right,
in a very Odin-esque fashion in order to save Moraine,
Right.
Which winds up being absolutely crucial for Rand's success.
Yes.
Which facilitates Rand's third question and lets him win the last battle and survive it.
Yes.
I love that
Moraine steps out of the door and she's like, ooh, that was freaky. And then Rand steps out too. And she's like, what the hell, dude? And then
like the doorway's like vibrating or something. And they're like, what the fuck?
And then like 3 seconds later, Matt steps out and Moraine is just like, you are both idiots.
And they're just like, she's just like, you see a random doorway and you guys just walk through it and they're just like, just following you. Other visitors of the Elfin. We know that several other people have visited in the past, an unknown multitude. According to an interview with Brandon Sanderson, Counselor Mordeth was one of them in the past that visited.
Oh, that's right.
Also coming to the world of the Elfins and the Ilfins in one of their past lives were the heroes Gaidel Kane and Birgitta Silverbow. But they did not return alive and died after wandering for 2 months, lost by the Labyrinth Runners. Also known that Lanfear and Morden have been in this world in recent times, but it is unknown if they came to ask the three questions.
Yeah.
So, fucking wild shit in the world of the snakes is.
Wild, bro.
The foxes.
Wilding out.
Yeah. We already know of the interaction between them and Matt and his three wishes. We talked about the treaties and agreements about the don't bring instruments of light, don't bring musical instruments, and don't bring I read this as Dixie Chicks. Don't represent Dixie Chicks. And I was like, what does the Dixie Chicks band have anything to do with this?
So there is a thing about that, like ancient symbolism using a chevron to be phallic and the inverted chevron to be more feminine. I don't see a parallel there. I mean, it could just be like everything else that Robert Jordan does and writes, you know, you've got two halves of a whole that are completely different and seem to be contradictory and combative against each other, but also at the same time work harmoniously together in order to get the job done.
So Oliver, one of the games that Oliver loves playing with Matt is the game of Snakes and Foxes.
Snakes and Foxes.
And Talivor, Talmanis actually provides like the clue to how to win the game, which everyone knows, like, because Talmanis is the one that makes the remark that the only way to win the game is to cheat, to break the rules.
Right.
And Oliver's like, no, there has to be a way to win the game. And Oliver does wind up winning the game without breaking the rules. Because Talmanis is like, no, we must have miscounted. We must have made a mistake somewhere and didn't account for something to let you win. But while Oliver is playing this game with Talmanis, is while Matt, Tom, Noel, and Moraine are all in the realm of the Fen, and Matt and Tom and Noel, they're able to win because they broke the rules of the treaty.
Exactly.
They brought in fire. They brought in iron. And they brought in musical instruments, and they use all of them to delay them, because the objective of the game of Snakes and Foxes is you roll the dice for both yourself as the human player and for the snake or foxes, and you move them all around, obviously as a human trying to stay away from the snakes and foxes, and as the snakes and foxes trying to get to the human. Snakes and foxes touch a human, you remove that piece from the board, that piece is no longer in play, and you win when a human piece makes it to the outer edge of the board. But the game seems to be made in a way to where most of the time a player did not make it as far as the outer edge. You have to make it all the way out to the outer edge and then back to the center. That's what it is. And that's like you win. Or to the center and back to the outer edge, something like that. Oh, yeah, no, it's the other way. Outer edge and then to the center. So it's like the game is stacked against you. There's no way to win it. Kids know this, and this is why kids give up on it so early on.
Right.
Until Oliver's like, I'm an absolute fucking G. Fugly, but a G. And he actually wins the game.
he is a little thug, isn't he?
Yes, I think Matt does bring in matches. And, yeah, super foreshadowed.
Yes.
But it is interesting that, you know, Oliver was both right and proved himself, or Palmanis was right, and then Oliver proved him wrong, but also the way that Palmanis talked about it was also the way that Matt and everybody else was able to win, by breaking the treaty. So the realm that they live in, strange laws of physics, things like weight and stress on buildings don't seem to matter as much. Realm appears to be folded in time and space. Being native to a place seems to allow the elfin and ilfin to see things and people in four dimensions. So they're almost like four-dimensional beings, or
yes,
beings with four-dimensional sight. The constructs of the elfin's world consist of curves and spirals. Contrast constructs of the ilfin's are sharp, straight lines and angles. Which is reflected in the game Snakes and Foxes, because the snakes go through curved areas and the foxes go through straight lines.
And oddly enough, Matt sees both of them when he enters that one tower.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the tower is also like a multidimensional object.
Yeah.
I almost wonder, like, I gotta wonder, like, is... So the tower shows up one day, right? Figure it out. I don't know. Somehow it shows up. Some person rolled a nat 20 on their fucking cleverness check and managed to enslave the Finn by this contract. Like, I have to believe that those Twisted Door Tirangrial were made by the Finn at some point in time. And it was like a deal, right? Hey, don't feed off of humans. Let's make this deal and we will come to you and you can feed off of us willingly, kind of a thing. But the eel Finn worked out some kind of back door. I don't know. It's a very intriguing interaction.
I feel like maybe it was a thing where, like, kind of like experimentation with the ways or something like that led them into like accidentally dropping into the realm of the Finn, which in the old tongue was known as Sindhol, Sindhol.
Yeah.
And it came to be a thing where like that gate was open and there could be like an invasion or fight, or it could just be really bad. Or free access.
Yeah.
And that, like, humanity was like, hey, look, you really want to feel feed on people's like emotions and experiences and all of that stuff. Well, who would have more of that that's more delicious than people that willingly seek you out, that are desperate for answers and favors? And so they made this agreement, thus saving the vast majority of the world, but also kind of damning the people that go through with it. But it seems like the...
Not if they're going to be smart about it, though. That's, I think, the point.
That's always the point of, like, genie wishes and shit like that. But I think the elephant were pretty much, like, go with the flow kind of thing. They were like, okay, yeah, you know, we get to enjoy their emotions and experiences, and we give them some answers to the future that don't have to be direct. No big deal. But the elephant were like, okay, yeah, you like, they agree with it at first, and then later they're like, oh, you son of a bitch, you kind of got us. You know what? All right, we'll show you what to do. Not specific enough, we eat your face.
Yeah.
But the last kind of interesting thing I have to talk about their realm is that And we see this whenever Matt and Tom and Noel and Moraine are running through and they're trying to escape. And when they're trying to go into the Chamber of Bonds. It seems like the only way to go straight is to follow at random. Like Matt's like, they're all trying to keep track of like where they're going because that's what they're used to. And about the time they lose track and they're like, this makes no sense where we're going, they arrive at the Chamber of Bonds.
Yeah.
Go randomly and you'll get where you want, which is what I do whenever I'm trying to flirt with people in the club. So, parallels. This is always fun, and I'll run through this really quick. Of course, we talked about the fairies, how both of their weakness towards iron, two distinct realms similar to the Selene and the Unselene, courts of the fairies in Scottish folklore. Also, like fairies, are not considered evil per se, and can be useful, but are not considered strictly good. The Fen also have a similarity to the Kitsune, fox-like creatures in Japanese mythology. Kitsune are credited with magical powers such as divination, foretelling, and the ability to weave vast illusions. Also described as trickster entities that target man. Like Fen, they like to make deals and are said to keep their promises. Matt Tominol's journey through their realm has similarities navigating a maze in an interactive fiction game. Such games often have a maze of rooms with identical descriptions and exits that are not simply connected. Description of Noel's attempts to make a map is similar to the maneuver of a player of a text adventure would do, you know, drawing it out as you go through it and being like, this makes no sense. The Snakes and Foxes game is patterned after Fox games. Some variants, such as Fox and Hounds, are unwinnable for one player unless their opponent intentionally throws the game. Also, given that Sind in the Old Tongue means never and Dol means land, their home world, Sindal, is Neverland. Reference to J.M. Barrie's works, namely Peter Pan.
That's, I did not know that one.
I definitely knew all of this and didn't read it off of the page I'm looking at, which you can definitely tell by watching this at youtube.com/Black Tower Podcast. And watching as my eyes stare straight at the webcam.
That's right.
So
no, that's cool.
That's why I love getting to like the parallel portion of like these discussions. Like I do it every time, and it's super nerdy, but it's because like these parallels are super dope.
Yeah.
Like we can catch a couple of them. It's like, oh, there's similarities between Matt and Odin, and there's similarities between Perrin and Thor, and there's similarities between the Fen and fairies. But then you get to other stuff, and it's like, okay, yeah, that's cool. That makes sense. Then you get to like the Sindal meaning Neverland, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's really fucking neat.
Which, like, is stuff like, okay, Origins of the Wheel of Time has a lot of those kinds of definitions and stuff like that.
Yep.
But it's always nice when you get to do a little bit of research and dig into the interview questions and whatnot that in panels over the years and see some of these things come to life. Especially for the Elfin and the Eelfin, because again, they're just a wild card. They're just thrown into the mix. We don't know where they came from. You know, we've done a series of ancient artifacts and or presences that are just unexplainable. The hero of the Horn of Valir, the Book of Translation that the Ogier have, the Tower of Genji, like we don't know what the hell that thing is, where it came from, how old it is, anything. And it's just there's these little relics in the Wheel of Time that break the rule, and they appear to be outside of that time. And it's amazing. I absolutely love it. I absolutely love this story for these kinds of reasons.
I just learned something new. I don't know where this comes from, but apparently the Ashandare is not the only way inside the Tower of Genji. Apparently, if you draw the symbol of the Fen with a bronze knife,
yeah,
the doorway will also appear.
That's how they got in.
Did they? I thought they just used the
Ashoka. That's how he got out. That's how he escaped.
I thought the guy got out with the same tool.
He asked Birgitta how she got in. She told him he got in, and as they were trying to escape, they kept running and couldn't find anything. They finally got into a room that was there. They were just cornered. They couldn't get out, and he was like, hold on, think back. What did I wish for? I wished for a way out. What did they give me? And then he realized that the Ashandarai was the only gift that didn't line up with filling holes in the memory and being free of Aes Sedai. He was like, that doesn't fit. Oh, wait, it's the key to get out of here. And so that's when he realizes that and touches the wall and it opens up. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was misremembering. I thought he got in. That out. But that makes a lot more sense and is a lot more interesting.
Yeah. It's time for a reread, honestly.
It's always time for a reread. Maybe we should reread together and try to do like some kind of like mini series thing about where we're at.
We can do that.
What else am I doing with my life? I'll give you a hint. Absolutely nothing.
In May, let's do a reread. We'll start doing a reread.
When are you guys doing your reread? It's gonna be May.
Reread. Oh my god, I'm doing that. I'm putting that on our Twitter.
Yeah, man, I'm all for it. We'll set like a schedule of like what to read by when, and
we'll do
mini recaps and stuff. Because I don't like doing full episodes that are just like us talking about the last three chapters we read. Not to throw shade at anybody that does. It's fantastic. It's great.
It's just
I don't want to do it. So we started Black Tower Podcast to talk about full spoiler stuff throughout the whole thing. And the fact that somehow we've been talking about mostly different things for now into our sixth year is incredible.
Sixth year.
Just like all of you are. And if you want to be extra incredible, go down to the comment section below or any of the other reviews.
And let us talk about it with us.
Yeah. Let us know what you think about the Finn. What do we miss? What are your other crazy ideas? What are some super interesting thoughts you may have, like Wolf Brother had here? If you're watching on YouTube, it's on screen now, about the Aiel who don't make it through the Crystal Columns Iridion becoming the clothing of the Finn. I like it. It's a really good way to tie in something that's semi-unexplainable. Now, the Crystal Columns allow you to see into the past. What if the Crystal Columns are a gift from the Eelfin? Fulfilling a wish for something. And whenever you go through and you can't handle the visions, the Eelfin get to consume you.
Oh, dude. Okay, you know what? This brings up a whole new line of questioning of, did Aes Sedai ever make...
Oh, we got Wolf Brothers' attention. That's all of them.
Did Aes Sedai ever make Tirangrial? Or... is the reason why we don't understand Tirangrial because Aes Sedai asked for Tirangrial or asked questions of the
Eelfin. I want to sleep, but I want to be awake. Dreamangrial.
Yeah. What if every single Tirangrial came from the Eelfin, which is why even when Elaine, who has a talent for Tirangrial, still can't create a perfect duplicate of other Tirangrial.
I like it.
And even when she can make as close to perfect as possible a duplicate, she still can't manage to make her own. What if that's the thing? What if the Eelfin are the only ones that ever contributed Tirangrial ever?
I mean, so the direct answer to my thing about the glass columns would be no, because they were entrusted to the Aiel during the breaking of the world. However, who's to say that they also didn't come still from the Finn before?
That's what I'm saying.
So, no, I get what you're saying about like overall Town Girl, but I'm looking specifically at the glass columns. You know me. Some random thought pops in my head, and I think it's super cool, and I hyperfixate.
You got it.
And now Now, yep, that's going to be, you know what, Jordan Kahn, I'm going to sit there and be like, well, did you guys ever think that the glass columns only exist because of a deal with the Finn and somebody got them delivered by a request from the Ilfin? And dude, that's why all the Aiel that fail the test of the columns never return because the Finn consumed them?
And it does say that they are where they do wear pale skin leather, and the Aiel in the books are pale skinned people.
Yeah. Yep.
Damn.
Wolf Brother, once again, you are the gateway to greatness. Fantastic. Idea, greatness! I love it. I love when this happens. And if you love when this happens, again, check out plenty of our episodes. We love to do these deep dives, these metaphysical talks, where sometimes we just throw out crazy theories that may just be interesting or fun to think of, and they're easily disproven. Other times they do work. Sometimes they work. Other times we talk for beer about 23 minutes, like frat boys. You know, it is what it is. We love for this to just feel like a free-flowing conversation. That's why we don't super structure the whole episode. There's not like, we don't have an outline we're going by. And if you thought we did, I hate to break it for you, but also, why? Yeah. Do I look like a man with a plan for an episode? But again, if you're listening to this live and you're at Jordan Kahn, or you're FOMOing Jordan Kahn, or you're just taking a break from Jordan Kahn, please feel free to reach out in whatever capacity you'd like for us to hang out, maybe go to lunch, maybe go to dinner with us.
We want
to. If you're physically there, if you're doing the FOMO Kahn thing, let us know. And we will definitely, definitely try to hop in for at least a few minutes to the FOMO Kahns we can, when we can, all that kind of fun stuff. And if you're physically there, and you're like, hey, I'm a little nervous about coming up to people, shoot one of us a message. Just let us know. We'll get up with you, and we have no problem introducing you to folks. Or just being the people you hang out with. Let us know. If not, then we hope to see you at WattCon. If we can't see you at WattCon and you want to come to something even smaller, feel free to come to Gathering Madness. Details coming later this year. Look for October 18th timeframe. Of course, yep. WattCon being mid-July. Right around my birthday. Not saying that's the best time to give me a birthday gift and show up, but last year's WattCon set the bar pretty freaking high. Because for my birthday, I got to share a bottle of Lagavulin with Michael Kramer. So, and all thanks to Josh and Wolf Brother, and I'm sure y'all had other help. The cake was fucking delicious. Y'all must have listened when I complained about whipped icing, because that cake was delicious.
That buttercream is where it's at, sir.
Right. Buttercream icing. Just so you guys know,
it's my brother, Eamon, who is coming to JordanCon with me. It is his birthday weekend. Like, it's his birthday on the 17th of April. But, so we're going into the weekend with his birthday. So, just saying.
We'll have to do something for him.
Yes, we will.
So, his dinner at Breakers is on me.
Aww.
As long as we get the private room and the all-you-can-eat, because I didn't like being in the booth last time. That kind of sucked.
I can't. Dude, I definitely want the private room again. That shit was fucking so much fun.
It is dope. It is great. But, yeah. So let us know in the comments down below, the whatever, reviews, whatever. What do you think about the Finn? What are some ideas you have about maybe what the Finn have done in the past, maybe do in the future, that kind of stuff. Let us know. And if you don't get an answer from us, feel free to head on over to blacktowerpod.com, where you can find links to our Discord, our Twitter, Facebook, all that kind of stuff, where you can send us direct messages and be like, hey, assholes, you said you'd respond, or you said that you would look at this kind of stuff, and I haven't seen anything. And that will probably trigger us for the third time to actually look at it. I mean, to respond to you. I'm really bad at looking at notifications and not responding immediately. Let us know. We love the engagement. We love chatting with fans and everybody else, because you guys are what drive us to keep doing this kind of stuff. The having these discussions that ultimately get all of 6 views on YouTube, and we love all 6 to 7 of you every time, because you care. And we care that you care, that we care that you care, that somebody cares about the TRICARE.
The care. I don't know. That cares. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks so much for joining us. Thanks so much for lining up and being awesome as we dole out this week's dose of taint. And wherever you are, we hope you leave here just a little bit more insane than you were when you first arrived. from all of us here at the Black Tower. I have been Josh. That's you.
I just put up the symbol.
Oh.
I don't have to say anything if I put up the symbol.
There it is.
And that's Andrew. Me.
And that's Andrew.
Goodbye, Sean Mahale. With the sword and the shield and the fire.
On the fire.
And Josh
made. The fire. That's the fire. That's the fire.
I love how like it's you laughing, but still in the bottom right corner, there's the Prime Video logo. So it's like you're laughing on Prime Video.
Yeah, it does. It does, doesn't yeah. it? Savor the care. Savor the BPT, BPTP. Savor the taint. As always, we love you guys. We hope you have the most amazing week, and we look forward to seeing you at JordanCon, either in person or virtually. Please say hi. We're going to probably say hi to you. Thank you so much once again. And Andrew, tell the good folks good night.
Good night, good folks, and we love you.